Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Ball rings supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Hour two of the Chuck Oliver Show kicking off on this Tuesday. I appreciate everybody coming here for your college football conversation. We bring you guests, of course, so that's part of the attraction. And on Tuesdays, bottom of hour one, he stays for a couple of segments. Dave Bartu, he is college football matrix, you know that, and it's awesome, and he was just with us. Coming up in, about 15 minutes, David Lake, InsideTheU.com, top source on Miami football, and they had a loss, they have a bye week, then they're back on the field next week. Who do they play? I think they play Boston College maybe next week. I think, maybe. And then bottom of the hour, we got Jake Rowe coming up. And Jake, of course, editor, Dogs HQ on 3 Network. And we will talk UGA with him. Pat Sullivan is a guy that I got to know who he was way, way, way early in life. And I try to, like I said, always, I'm transparent with what my history is, but I try not to let it affect my commentary. But I didn't even grow up an Auburn fan. I grew up a Bama fan. That's the house I was raised in. But Pat Sullivan, if you don't know the name, he passed recently, about 3 years ago. And he was a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback at Auburn, and then he played in the NFL for a while. He won the Heisman in 71, then he played in the NFL for a while, and then he got into coaching about a decade after he stopped playing in the NFL. Now, if you want to know just how long 50 years can be in a sport like football, I said 1971, Pat Sullivan won the Heisman Trophy. He finished the season with 2,012 yards passing and 20 touchdowns. And, folks, it was enough to shake the foundation of the Southeastern Conference. So running back at Cornell named Ed Marinaro, who wound up as an actor. Hill Street Blues, maybe, most famous for, but again, this is 50 years ago. So Pat Sullivan wins the Heisman, and then he turns into an NFL draft pick, and he plays in the league, or he's on the roster in the NFL for about 5 or 6 years. Now, one of the reasons that I knew who Pat Sullivan was, he was one of the very first NFL, quote, free agents. And I have to say free agents because there was a very narrow description about what an NFL veteran would have to do to get a very limited shot at free agency. It was 1976, and Major League Baseball had just gotten free agency. So the NFL was like, well, we got to do something to kind of pretend we're doing it too. And then they did. They had something called Plan B that came in, I don't know, like the early 90s. But before then, I'm going to give you an example. This was free agency when the NFL decided in 1976 we're going to get free agency. If you sign, we're going to rank players. And for the top tier of players, if you sign this guy as a free agent, you have to forfeit 2 first-round draft picks. Well, guess what happened? Nobody would sign free agents. So the NFL could look at the players and go, no, we put it out there. See, that's called collusion. But anyway, so there was free agency, and Pat Sullivan actually got to change teams, and he went and played for Washington for a season, and then he retired. But because he kind of made headlines, because there was free agency, and he was one of them, it was just notable because you never had it before. So he played one season, and then he retired, and I went into private business. And then after a decade, his alma mater called. Auburn was making a change at OC, and they brought back the former Heisman Trophy. It's a popular move, folks. And so if you are a man of a certain age and you think, oh, yeah, Pat Sullivan, he was always that older guy who used to play, but he's a coach to you. Think of the scenario in 1986 when Auburn hires Pat Sullivan to be his OC, his quarterback coach. It's the same thing as Scott Frost, for instance, going from player to coach. Josh Heupel, who was a Heisman finalist. Was he the runner-up or third? Josh Heupel being hired as a head coach. It's what it is. He was a quarterback coach, now he's a head coach. And that's what happened for Pat Sullivan eventually. He became head coach at TCU and then later at Samford and Birmingham. But go back to 1986. That's when I was a freshman and he was hired at Auburn. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember him. He was a free agent. He won the Heisman. And so I kind of knew it. But there was a name associated with Pat Sullivan's hiring that's the purpose of this whole conversation, because he was a wild exception. When I walked onto campus as a freshman and was hearing about the new quarterback coach was somebody that I knew, Pat Sullivan, there was a name that was associated in that conversation that I had really not heard before. All Auburn fans know it, a guy named Jack Crow, and he was Pat Dye's offensive coordinator. And to hear Auburn fans talk about Jack Crow, he wanted to outlaw the forward pass, and you run the ball basically every play. And they did a lot of that. And they were successful. But then you wanted to kind of widen a little bit and play a little bit more modern and maybe pass the ball just a tiny little bit. Jack Crow couldn't do that, so they decided to move on. But Auburn fans, to hear them talk about Jack Crow, it was a really negative reference in every single way. Well, Jack Crow kept on coaching. And so after he left Auburn, he went to Clemson, then he went to Arkansas, and then Arkansas promoted him from OC to head coach. Now, the reason I bring this up, and I say that Jack Crow was an exception, like I said, I never heard of the guy other than, oh, yeah, he was the OC and he was terrible. Well, he was the OC, and then he moved on, and eventually he was the head coach at Arkansas. And how was he the exception? Because in 1992, he got fired in September. He was the head coach at Arkansas, and he got fired. When I say he got fired in September, it's a serious undersell. If you go back to Saturday, September 5th, week one of the 1992 season, Arkansas opened at home against the Citadel and got beat 10-3. Jack Crow got fired that night. So at that point, Joe Kynes was promoted to interim, and then Danny Ford was named head coach, the expat from Clemson, and actually led them to the SEC West Championship in 1995. So it kind of turned on him. But if you go back to week one in 1992, that's when Arkansas made headlines, because they were the exception, because they fired their head coach before Thanksgiving. There was a shy of any sort of personal scandal, and you'd have coaches resign sometimes. Sometimes they would just look up at the scoreboard and go, yeah, we're now 0-7, and it's not getting better. I'm just going to put my hands up and walk away. That would happen. Do you know what almost never happened on the school side? You almost never fired the guy until November. And in most cases, there was a firing season. It started the week before Thanksgiving, and it was kind of concluded by Championship Saturday. And I'm just talking modern times here. That is not what it is anymore, folks. We just talked to Dave Bartu, who, this is how he keeps his lights on. All right, this is how he affords whatever weaponry into the forest to hunt elk and caribou. He consults college football programs, and he tells them how to win. And specifically with who to hire. And he was the first ever. He had a college football program. He told this about a month ago, that this past offseason, November, December, January, first time ever, and he's the first to ever do this, he had a team that plays Division I football go to him and say, this is how much in total we have for our entire college football staff. Moneyball it. You pick the best head coach, etc., and moneyball this thing. And they hired who Dave suggested, and they got all of them. So he knows what he's doing. And we were just talking to him in hour one, and I was talking about the jobs that are open. Nebraska was first. Arizona State, amid the scandal, it's not amid the scandal, it's amid the loss to Eastern Michigan. Okay, that's the scandal. Sparky got beat by that bunch. So I'm asking him about Nebraska, Arizona State. I'm asking about Georgia Tech. He's talking to me about Colorado, Auburn, like some really good programs. Mack Brown could be, because they have not passed a lick this season. And I'm going to tell you, especially in secondary, they got some talent. They got a raw deal, or a kid did, actually, from the NCAA eligibility up front, but that's a different story. You just got to deal with it and treat it like an injury and just roll on. So, but beyond that, there's talent there, folks, because you know what North Carolina does every single season? North Carolina recruits every single season. So, when you're talking, they have talent. It is September 27th. I'm asking about three Power 5 schools. Dave's bringing up like 10 more. Indiana? Tom Allen, can we get in the DeLorean? Can we go back about, I don't know, 2 years ago? Bell of the ball, Tom Allen. And then a season that went a little bit sideways, and then the beginning to this season, you're like, wait a minute. And by the way, his former starting quarterback, what do the kids say? Dropping dimes at UW right now. Michael Penix, stud. So Indiana, they lost the portal a little bit as well. So that's what it is. All right, we're going to take a little bit of a break. Come back, as I said, talk you with David Lake.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Welcome back to the Chuck Oliver Show on a Tuesday, and things weren't so super-duper this past weekend for the Miami Hurricanes, and I don't believe that there can be – it would be very difficult for there to be a big-picture issue with a coach, leading his team out of the tunnel for the third or fourth game. If there's a big-picture issue already – that would be unique. I don't think there is with Miami. I think it was just a stinker of a Saturday during the current landscape of college football where every program can now have a former four-star receiver from Alabama. So that was part of the issue. But you know what? That explains Middle Tennessee's success. We're here to talk about what Miami can do to right themselves. And to that end, I want to welcome on from InsideTheU.com, about number one source we got when it comes to Miami football. It is David Lake. Brother, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Chuck. Good to be on with you. Yeah, Saturday was a tough game, but let's get into it.
Quarterback situation right now. Who would be getting the? There's no game this week. They have the bye, so it's sort of a if you're gonna have that loss in a get right scenario where you can figure things out, it may be this week. Just give us a flyover of the quarterbacks right now.
Yeah, I mean, I do think – so Tyler Van Dyke, for your listeners that aren't aware, Tyler Van Dyke was pulled in the third quarter of the Middle Tennessee State loss, having a very rough game. Seems like he's having issues adjusting to the new Josh Gattis system. And then also, just beyond that, he's missing some routine throws. And that's the toughest thing to wrap my head around with Tyler. Just seems to be – in a mental funk. And so in the third quarter, they did insert Jake Garcia into the game, and he had more success moving the ball. Now, I do think he got away with some things that are a little bit risky, but the end result on those plays were positive at times. I think he was better on that day. Am I necessarily sold that he should be the starter in Miami's next game when they host North Carolina on October 8th? I'm not sold on that. I still think Tyler Van Dyke deserves a chance to play his way out of this. And I do think Josh Gattis needs to have some conversations with Tyler Van Dyke in terms of, okay, we know last year you were highly productive in a different style of offense.
Yeah.
What can we take from that offense and use and maybe help you find some better production, consistency, and confidence? So, I mean, I do think it's somewhat of a quarterback competition, but I would expect Tyler to still be the starter, but on a short leash.
Continue, David Lake, inside the U. It's where you go for University of Miami athletics information, especially football for us. Well, why is the offense failing in general? You can talk injury concerns. Unfortunately, at running back, which is kind of a normal thing for a Miami fan over the last 5 years, but injuries at running back and wide receiver, just whatever you want to go, because that offense has not been what I was expecting necessarily.
I think they have a lack of they just don't have game-changing wide receivers. And I think that's been tough. I also think, too, I think as Miami has put their film out there in these first four games, I think defensive coordinators are seeing that. I think they are stacking the box, daring Miami to beat them on the outside with some of these receivers. Now, I do think schematically there's some things that aren't helping the situation. Josh Gattis has installed a lot of bunch sets, and that just kind of compounds the issue in my mind because allows defenses to just stack the box. I mean, Middle Tennessee State played a base defense the whole game. And so from a Miami perspective, I hope that Josh Gattis is going to be more willing to spread things out a little more formationally. And I do think that would help Tyler Van Dyke because, in a weird way, Tyler is really good at throwing the ball downfield. He kind of struggles, honestly, with some gimme throws in the short passing game. And that's kind of what Josh Gattis is asking him to do in these first four games. And it's just not working, and Tyler's confidence is leaking. And I think you have a bit of an avalanche effect happening because of all that.
Continuing, David Lake again, Inside the U. It's where you go for Miami athletics information. Now, I mentioned in the preface that it would be notable, David, if a new coach in any situation would already have big picture issues after only three or four games. But I will address the Miami fans' elephant in the room because now it's social media, so, you know, a pound of salt. But is there a culture or attitude problem with the players?
I don't think there's an attitude problem. I do think there's a culture problem from the standpoint of Miami has had a poor culture for 15 years. I do think, and this isn't just for like this group of players. I think this is like the athletic department in general, and this is what they have to work toward changing. People around there are just a little too comfortable with going 7-5, 8-4, because that's what Miami's been for 15 years. Yep. And so do I think there's something to, like, if people wanted to point out, hey, this team thought they could just show up and beat Middle Tennessee State, and while Miami is certainly more talented than Middle Tennessee State, they're not that much more talented. So I do think that Mario does need to change the culture, but I don't think it's at a bad place because Mario Cristobal is the head coach, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely get it. It's sort of like just taking the pulse of the room. It's almost like I need to fix the defensive line or the secondary. Wrapping up, David Lake, inside to you, linebacker play. I get it.
Yeah.
I've coached. I mean, anybody, there is something about, especially when you think you need to stop the bleeding, playing upperclassmen who have some experience. Talk about the depth chart at linebacker because I think there's some good-looking, really young ball players there. But I see the guys who have already, you know, gotten the letter jacket. They're the ones running around the field, maybe not the most talented guys. What's your take, though?
Yeah, I do think they need to start giving Wesley Bissaint more playing time. He's the, you know, top 100 linebacker that's a true freshman. And he's played maybe 25 snaps on defense this season. They're kind of sprinkling him in. And he's performed well. I think this bye week is a time to get him more involved. Because like you're alluding to, the older guys just aren't getting the job done. It seems like every game of the season, each older guy is taking a turn with a bust. And, you know, this past week we saw Corey Flagg, the middle linebacker, looked like he was stuck in quicksand. And it's a significant issue. Defenses are going to attack that position group. And so, again, I mean, Mario Cristobal and his staff have to find answers. And I think that's a potential answer. But, of course, when you do a change like that, it's going to upset some upperclassmen. But at this point, you lost to Middle Tennessee State. I think it's a fair time to do that.
Last thing for you, and it's interesting the way you put it. You're like, yeah, there's a culture thing to be fixed, but you can't lay it at Mario's feet because he just needs to fix it. It wasn't really his. All right, talk about, though, the Miami fan base. And I know it's post-game against Middle Tennessee, my gosh. But I'm sure you do a reaction segment or video or an instant analysis. What was the feedback from the Miami fans following that? It had to be brutal.
Oh, yeah. Utter shock. I mean, and I don't blame them. I was shocked watching that game unfold as well. So there was a segment in that game, right, where Miami, it was like end of the third quarter, early fourth quarter. Miami's down 14. They're down on the one-yard line, and they got four tries to punch it in. I thought if they punch that in, the game, the momentum of the game, you know, going to avalanche on Middle Tennessee State, and Miami's going to pull out that win. They got stood up at that goal line, and then the next play by Middle Tennessee State, they bomb up Miami for a 98-yard touchdown, and that was game over. So, you know, it was a shocking result. I do think, in a weird way, it has only motivated Mario more, just hearing what I'm hearing from the inside. And so, look, I think in the long run, Miami's going to be just fine. Mario's the guy for this job. He's a maniac. He's going to get things right in time. I just think this rebuild is going to take longer than, you know, Miami fans and even I expected, quite frankly.
All right, give me a quick 30-second before I let you go. 30-second, like, trip advisor, not about, like, Saturday's environment, but what is the, quote, new environment like for a Miami fan attending a home game? Because they've kind of spruced up, they put a roof on the stadium, sort of. What is that like compared to, like, 5 years ago?
It's a much more enjoyable stadium to watch a game in. You mentioned the little roof thing that, yeah, you can sit in the shade. You're not baking in the sun. Also, too, just the amenities surrounding Hard Rock Stadium are top-notch. They have F1 races there. They host many big-time concerts, Super Bowl. So it is a tremendous venue. Now it's 45 minutes away from the campus. But it's a tremendous venue. It really is.
And by the way, the 45 minutes David just said, that's at the right time of day. I got some Wake Forest and Louisville fans that made the mistake of staying downtown Miami for the bowl game about 15 years ago. It was an adventure getting up there. David, I appreciate it as always, brother. Thank you, man.
Thank you, Chuck.
David Legg, InsideTheU.com. Going to take a break. Come back. More of the Chuck Oliver Show next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. To the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Bottom of hour two, Chuck Oliver Show rolling through a Tuesday, and it's college football season. Now, I say that not just as a statement of fact, but we got a busy working media professional on hold. We're going to get to him in about 15 seconds, but I got to say something about it being college football season, because at least in my world, and certainly for these 2 hours a day, it's college football season. There is a pro sport getting it way wrong, and I mean at the worst possible time, like when my alma mater is playing a conference game on my TV screen and ESPN decides that I will also watch Aaron Judge take an AB. Now, there's no real record here. Like with Interleague, there's no American League record to be set anymore because some of his games come against the Padres and the Cubs. As far as the team record, I do acknowledge the Yankees. That team's different than any other team. However, I still do not give two craps about an individual team record, even if it's the Yankees. If Cedric Mullins was about to set the Orioles single-season record, I don't believe Major League Baseball would be cutting into my team on an SEC Saturday, because that's what I got watching my team play Saturday in the Southeastern Conference. I don't know if this next individual, he watched the broadcast copy, but we're going to bring him on to find out. Guy who does a tremendous job covering the Georgia Bulldogs on the On3 Network, it is Jake Rowe. Jake, how are you, brother?
I'm good, Chuck. How are you, buddy?
Doing all right. I don't know. If you're an SEC alum and you're watching your alma mater on a Saturday, I really got annoyed at this, and I found myself to be a pretty easygoing individual.
Yeah, I don't get that. Not that. I mean, you know, there are certain markets and certain things that you may want to interrupt. Interrupt pro sports, I guess. You know, I got the whole idea of the Giants doing what they did. That's cool because it's local. But, I mean, I think it's cool. I'm a sports fan, but not appropriate, not needed.
Like I said, I've got full perspective on it. It just shocked me about every, about a quarter and a half. I was like, okay, we're back to Aaron Judge again. Let's talk Georgia Bulldogs and the crime blotter. They had a player arrested, DUI, and it was a serious one. Talk about the change to the depth chart. The legal stuff will play out and the discipline, and they'll take it seriously and deal with it. Talk about the depth chart and how it changes the on-field product.
Well, I would love to be able to tell you, Chuck, that they're going to turn to somebody different, but I don't know that. You know, the UGA student handbook is kind of ambiguous. You know, you would think he'd get a suspension. It used to be an automatic suspension, and he does have an automatic suspension, but it's pending a review. So, you know, there will be a little a collection of individuals who will review this Javon Bullard thing. They'll come down with a ruling. It'll be reviewed by Josh, director, and then they'll go from there. As far as who's next, you know, I think long-awaited look at Tyke Smith, the West Virginia transfer who tore his ACL last year, is probably the next man up. You know, they'll probably have Chris Smith there who can bump down from his strong safety position and be replaced by Dan Jackson, and then Georgia can do it that way. You know, those are the two things that I see as most likely.
Do you remember, oh, gosh, might have been 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. At some point, do you remember Jonathan Rumpf when he came to town?
Oh, no doubt about it. He was the a lot of folks referred to him as the Rumpficorn because he just, you know, he was almost a mythical creature.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, he started getting referred to as Sasquatch because you just didn't see him a whole lot. But every time you did, he would kind of do something.
Absolutely. And I'm wondering, like, Tyke Smith, that this guy was, you know, all conference and was going to be a step in, plug and play, and it's been an injury. And then it's also, like, what is their satisfaction level with his effort, skill, production? Just give us a flyover because I keep hearing about him, but he's the rump shaker.
Yeah, he has, he's got a little bit of action. I want to say he played early in either week two or week three. I think it was week two. Against Samford, he played well. I mean, he did some good things against a team that kind of challenges your perimeter play, and I thought he made some plays. He showed a nose for the football, and that's kind of what he did at West Virginia as well. He's, you know, kind of just an undersized playmaker. You know, Kirby has talked about him a couple of times, just kind of about how hard he works and how he's been hitting some high speeds on the GPS in practice. He's been looking pretty good. So, you know, this might be our first chance to get an extended look at him. And, you know, when you saw him at West Virginia and you kind of looked at some of the plays he made, he just kind of gave off that vibe as maybe a little bit of a gamer. Maybe he's not the biggest guy in the world. Maybe he's not the fastest guy in the world, but he just kind of plays football really well. And, you know, we may get to see some of that this week against Missouri.
Continuing, again, talking UGA with Jake Rowe. Get him on Twitter. Well, simple enough, at Jake M. Rowe. You can get him at On3.com. All right, let's move up to the line of scrimmage. And last year we knew all the names, and there were about four of them. You had three starters and Jalen Carter, and you had about four guys that really you would call defensive linemen. There are more, and if you want to include the edges, just walk us through some of the names that Walthor and Logue and whomever else you just want to give us a flyover, just a couple of these guys, because you're now a month into the season, and it's basically a whole new crew.
Yeah, you know, Jalen Carter, and it's been that way because, you know, the long leftover from last year, maybe the most talented of the bunch, has been kind of banged up. I mean, he's played the last 3 weeks about as many snaps as he played in the season opener against Oregon. You know, Nazir Stackhouse is playing a lot. Warren Brinson's playing a lot. Those guys were rotational pieces. Bill Norton got in there, had a tackle for a loss against against Kent State this past week. Mikel Williams, the true freshman, playing a lot. But then the guy that kind of flashed a little bit of Kent State, and I think his arrow may be pointing up, is true freshman Bear Alexander. You know, he did some things. He played about 15 snaps against Kent State. He flashed. He made a few plays. I think he's a guy that if he continues to do what he's supposed to do, I think he might be in the rotation to stay.
Flip it over to offense and talk running back. Branson Robinson, is there an emerging role for him perhaps? Is this really what Kenny – I've already asked you about Kenny McIntosh this season. I know earlier after the week one with the – I think it was 9 catches against Oregon. This really looks like what he may be. Talk about some of the roles that maybe some folks have settled into.
Well, you know, you got Kenny McIntosh there and more of that James Cook and maybe even more of an accentuated passing game role. He's probably coming off his best game as a runner, too. He did some good things against Kent State. Kendall Milton has kind of been your primary runner at tailback, you know, led Georgia in rushing the first 2 weeks. I've seen a few struggles out of him the last couple weeks, not necessarily from a, you know, it's not like he's out there getting lathered up with 20 carries and showing some struggles. He's just getting limited opportunities, and then, you know, a couple, two or three things don't go the right way. You know, I think Dejon Edwards is a guy that's coming on, and he was really impressive during that Kent State game. He's always been a guy that, you know, gets in the game, and you're like, man, you know, I know that the opposing defense is tired, but I also know that the opposing defense knows the run's coming, and he's still making plays. As far as Branson Robinson goes, you know, he's behind those guys that are more experienced than him. But at the same time, you got Kirby Smart saying in yesterday's press conference, we got to continue to bring him along because he does some things from a skill standpoint that the other guys don't. I'm pretty sure right there he's talking about a blend of size and power and speed that none of the other guys quite have.
All right, Jake, can we be just like bottom line, like, you know, put the whistle and the clipboard back on and just let's talk about playing football and what it is. You have to know the difference between pain and injury, and I know that there is a difference, and so I'm not attacking anybody. But outside of Brock Bowers, what does Georgia really have as far as pass catchers? And take the backs out of it, because I know there's a heck of a – shake the tree, man. They got 4-star and 5-stars falling out of it. I know about a hamstring and recovery from a knee and whatever else. I'm tired of hearing about all that. Where is the stud?
Yeah, it's – outside of Brock Bowers, the stud's not there. Now, that's one incredible stud to have. And, you know, he's got a good running mate there in Darnell Washington, who does a tremendous job as well, just doesn't get a ton of targets. You know, coming into last week, I would have said, well, you know, Ladd McConkey's as steady as they come, but Georgia saw a version of Bad Ladd on Saturday. He really struggled with a fumble, a couple drop passes, a muff punt. I mean, he in and of himself, you know, that could probably, you know, get an honorary something from Kent State for all that momentum he gave Kent State. Now, he rebounded well and played really well in the second half. I think Ladd McConkey's a really good player and is the kind of guy that can be like a go-to receiver for Georgia simply because of how quick and sudden he is. He's just tough to cover no matter where you line him up and they move him around. He's a good compliment for Brock Bowers. But that guy's just not there right now, and I think as soon as, you know, A.D. Mitchell, who's really dealing with the only injury in his career right now, as soon as he's back from that ankle injury, that'll be a big boost there. And then, I mean, you know, you'd like to say, well, Arian Smith's on the road recovery too, but Arian Smith has just been one thing right after another, so you're kind of holding your breath there.
Wrapping up again, always appreciate his time. Jake Rowe, get him on Twitter at Jake M. Rowe. I checked in on this after week one, and I think it was only one punt as well. Brett Thorson, it's a big deal to me because it opens up so many things for play calling offensively, especially on fourth down, what you want to get done defensively. What do you think Georgia's looking like in the kicking game, specifically at punter?
Well, you know, Thorson's done a pretty good job. I think he's got 6 punts through 4 games, though. So it's not like he's done a lot, but he's, you know, with what he's done, he's 45 yards a punt. You know, he's shown some touch. I'm sure there's a stinker waiting for him out there. I'm sure George is hoping that it doesn't come at the wrong time, but he's a young punter, and they're going to miss hit some every now and then. And, you know, I'm sure that's probably in the cards for him in the future, but, you know, under very little utilized. I don't think any coach would say their punter's underutilized, but he's very little utilized at this point, but I think he's got a lot of talent.
Anybody else for the injury report, the health report? What does Dr. Jake Rowe say?
Yeah, no, not really. You know, just the same guys that we've been talking about here for a couple, two or three weeks now. I mean, I know Kenny McIntosh has a thigh bruise, but he told us yesterday himself that he's good to go and he'll be out there. So I think Georgia has remained pretty healthy. I do know this, though, from a different view of it, not a lot of guys missing time, but a lot of kind of minor nicks and bruises here and there. You know, Kirby mentioned Ladd McConkey has a foot. I know Tate Ratledge is also battling kind of a tweaked ankle in addition to the injury he came back from last year. Got a lot of those little deals hanging around, too. Every team does.
Jake, appreciate it as always, brother. Talk to you soon.
Anytime, bud.
Great information always on 3.com. Get him on Twitter at Jake M. Rowe. So, Georgia, again, coming off a first month with four opponents. And I will say that two times in the first month of the season, you can look at Georgia and say, against Samford, I think it was just a talent thing. We're just going to lean on them, and we're going to be 33 points better. Against Kent State, that's a pretty good coach team. Pretty well-coached team, and there is talent scattered about it. They weren't going to win that ball game, but Georgia had to work. And when I mentioned Brock Bowers, man, what a special, unusual talent. He is the latest. Do you know what Brock Bowers would be? Brock Bowers beginning in, about 3 months. Do you know what you would start? Brock Bowers would be the kid who, entering his junior season, we would see the article about there's nothing left for him to achieve in college. So, this was Marcus Lattimore. Do y'all remember that? After his freshman season. And I was like, that's it. You get hurt anytime. Stop it. You have to play. Show the NFL how tough you are. About a month later, I was like, oh. Yeah, that was really bad. Was it the Tennessee game? That was the injury first, and then the second one was the Mississippi State game? Holy smokes. I would say traumatic injuries. Just really violent, awful injuries to his ACLs. And I think it was it one on each knee? So that was Marcus Lattimore. But he was the first kid that I remember a lot really being written about. And remember, he was just one class ahead of Jadeveon. And so then we heard about a Jadeveon, and it became a regular thing, especially after kids started sitting out of bowls. Folks, we would hear this about Brock Bowers, except there's now name, image, likeness, so kids getting paid now. We would hear this about Brock Bowers, except now there is name, image, likeness. But do you know what the bigger thing is? That article that was talked about 10 years ago about Marcus Lattimore, he should train for the draft. Folks, that's already happening. We haven't had kids come out and say, I've played 2 years. Y'all seen enough for free. I'm going to go down to IMG or the place in Arizona, the other place where you train for the draft, and I'm going to drag tires and pull parachutes and do everything else. I'm going to get ready for April. That's what I'm going to do. We haven't had a kid declare that. Isn't that kind of what Ja'Marr Chase declared? And I got no issue with it, by the way. So let me inject that. Isn't that what Terrence Marshall declared? Like, wasn't it a few weeks into the season, Terrence Marshall's like, we're going to have a team meeting and we're going to come together. And then two Saturdays later, yeah, I'm out. He made his decision. I don't fault him. But let's call it what it is. It's not opting out. It's quitting. It's no longer playing. It's saying, I have made a commitment to this, and then I have to say, and maybe when you made it, you meant it. And now you don't. So that's just, I'm just giving a bottom line description of what's going on. We're already having kids make that declaration. After their sophomore year of, you know what, I played for free. My arm, my ankle, hip, elbow, shoulder. So that's already going on. And it started in 2020. Again, it was blatant as, well, I'm going to opt out. Well, that means that you played 2 years and you're not eligible for the draft, so you're not going to play your junior season. We would be hearing about Brock Bowers. It's not just name, image, likeness. That's part of it because the kid's got – he doesn't have one of those Breaking Bad storage facilities with the $80 million in it, but he's getting paid for a college kid. Think about when you were a college kid. All right, there is a reason that you go to the $5 footlong and the 99 cent at Arby's because you don't have any money. Brock Bowers has money now and a pretty good amount of it. And in a year, he's going to be in the draft, but he can keep playing. Just a fabulous, fabulous individual sort of talent there. So and having a bang-up season. He had a first two games sort of lackluster as far as numbers. They're spreading it around a little bit. Not the past 2 weeks. I think he has three rushing touchdowns the past 2 weeks. So, and that's the name of the game, getting the end zone. Bottom line last year, for all the catches, yards, and everything, Bowers had 13 touchdowns. That's all. If you score 13 touchdowns course of college season, especially in Power 5, especially if you're Georgia, that's something, man. And he's, again, getting in the end zone this year. So we're going to break, come back, wrap up next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
I think defensively, our inability to get off the field was a real factor. And like I said, they went for it eight times on fourth down. Got six of them, and of those six, a few of those were close to we couldn't get the quarterback on the ground to get them off the field, which was disappointing.
Steve Sarkisian, speaking the truth, doesn't change the truth, but he's speaking the truth. As Texas, they dropped to 0-1 on Saturday. They got the L, but I would say guns up, Red Raiders got the win. So congratulations to Joey McGuire, but he's talking about their defense and the fact that they're missing that guy who makes that play, and that's how you win. So Steve Sarkisian wrapping up what happened last week. What's going to happen this and it's only Tuesday, but what's going to happen this week in college football? Let me say that because of the – I talk about Dave Bartu and predictive models and hiring and people movement and all that. Same thing, weather. I mean, it's widgets. There are predictive models in everything. Saturday night, state of Florida, up the Atlantic coast, apparently, no bueno. Not really what you want. So we have about every type of change possible around Hurricane Ian. And the first change is let's move the location. We'll keep the game on Saturday. South Florida was going to host ECU. And they were going to play in Tampa at 2:30 on Saturday. They're actually going to move it to FAU Stadium on the other side of the state. So they're going from Tampa, which is obviously Gulf Coast, they're going over to the other side of the state. And so it was going to be played at 6 o'clock in Tampa. And the later you get Saturday, the worse it gets. So they're going to play it at 2:30 on Saturday. So they moved it to the other side of the state, south, and up 4 hours. So we're keeping it on Saturday. We're just changing where and when. South Carolina has decided they're going to move their game up some. We're going to, in Columbia, whatever they decide to do, I mean, you talk about getting the worst of it, man. There have been plenty of examples, and it has affected South Carolina football. It's affected Columbia a lot more. They moved that game. Wasn't it the LSU game that they moved to Baton Rouge because of just the severe, horrible flooding situation in Columbia that they couldn't afford? To have, I don't know, 60,000 people potentially show up or 50,000 or 30,000 people show up at a stadium, you have to have security personnel. You have to have EMS. You have to have a lot of professionals there to serve 30,000 people. Well, those are football fans. And you don't have to have the game. You needed those same people. Emergency services. You need those same people, like, I don't know, helping neighborhoods and such. So South Carolina, they've got their experience. Whatever South Carolina decides, I'll roll with you. So South Carolina going to play South Carolina State this weekend. Instead of Saturday, it's going to be Thursday night. Now, this really different one is going to be the Florida Gators. Got a home game versus Eastern Washington. It's going to be played on Sunday. High noon kick. So, I don't know. If you're Catholic, you can go to the Saturday night service, right? You can go to the 9 a.m. service and then Sunday school at 10 and still be. I'm telling you, high noon in the South and the Deep South, there are concerns. I will go all the way back to when I was just a young boy, elementary school, middle school, et cetera. Do you know what the real fight? I would go to church because it's just, I figured my mom, it was going to happen anyway. Deep South mom, go to church, I'll break your neck. So I was going to church regardless. It was leaving church. You grew up in the rural South and went to a Methodist church. Pastor stops talking. That's when all the mamas start talking in the parking lot. Got to get my mom. Why? Because NFL Today is about to start on CBS. So it was always, Mom, get in the car. We got football. Well, Sunday in Gainesville, you got it at noon. So you're just going to have to change the whole thing or maybe risk, I don't know, you put your life everlasting on the line. Maybe miss a Sunday, but do what you got to because it's college football involved. Again, they're at home against Eastern Washington, and it will be a noon. That's as of now. And I'm going to say it's only Tuesday. So that's what that is. All right, wraps it up on a Tuesday, folks. We will be back in 22 hours. Recharge batteries, talking more college football right here on Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey, sandwich lovers, today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open, Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.